From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where we hear from politicians and experts on the issues of the day.
Last week, the United States House of Representatives took a major step against the Chinese company ByteDance, which owns TikTok. It passed a bill that would require ByteDance to sell TikTok to a non-Chinese company or face a ban in the US. The US Senate is expected to pass the bill, and President Biden has flagged that he would sign it into law. But Anthony Albanese has said that Australia will not follow the US lead, although he does stress that he will keep a close eye on the advice coming from the Australian security establishment. Some time ago, the federal government banned TikTok on government devices, concerned about its potential for Chinese spying. TikTok is one of the fastest growing platforms for news and entertainment, especially among young people. Those wanting action against TikTok variously argue that China could misuse the vast amount of information it can harvest and that it is bad for young people, many of whom become addicted. To unpack what these developments mean for Australia, we're joined today by Leslie Seebeck. She's an independent consultant who was formerly CEO of the Cyber Institute at the Australian National University. She's also worked in the past for the Prime Minister's Department and the Defence Department. Leslie Seebeck, should Australia be following the Americans' lead on TikTok, as we did earlier in banning TikTok on official devices?
Okay, thanks, Michelle. I think certainly banning on the official devices is worthwhile. I'd also strongly recommend that any journalist or anyone that may feel that they're of interest to the Chinese state also think twice about having TikTok on their phones. Should it be banned more generally? That's a much more difficult question. There are some real, very real concerns about TikTok. And if I could put them into two groups, there's the technology concerns and then there's the political control concerns. On the technology side of the ledger, we have concerns about access to data and use of data. And it certainly has been the case whereby American journalists, for example, have been actively targeted by the company because of their reporting on TikTok. And their use of TikTok data was used to that end. More generally, you know, what sort of data is TikTok collecting? People often say, well, TikTok's collecting data, but so does Facebook and all the rest. But it's a different way of doing things because what drives TikTok is the algorithm and that real-time responsiveness, which makes it so attractive. So if you think about Facebook, a lot of what they do with data, that's more of a fetch principle. So there's data there, it's stored, it can be pulled back for use by advertisers, etc. It's much more of a more static, even though it's, you know, very fast moving in general terms. What TikTok does, it's a constant refresh of data to drive that algorithm. So every time you click on a video or, you know, something like that, or you might be following an influencer and they change, it's this constant interaction. So the data they're collecting allows a lot more granularity and a lot more sense about what you might do. And if we add what's happened with things like ChatGPT, that predictive element, because ChatGPT tries to work out what the next word is, for example, you can start to see the power of that. That takes me to the second point, which is the algorithm itself. So it's what they call tailored content, entertainment content is how they talk about it. Essentially, it's curated content. And if you think about a spectrum, there's a tailored content, which you tend to think the language implies it's for your benefit. A step sideways is curated. We are doing this, but it's more potentially with a different motive in mind. And eventually up the other end, you get censorship. So that's essentially part of the issue with the algorithm as well. It actually, it's not just what you look at. It's also what the algorithm thinks you might want to look at. And of course, that's, you know, behind closed doors, it's infinitely, you know, it can be manipulated. And often it might just take a small tweak. So that's the technology side. On the political side, the concern is that this is essentially a Chinese company. It is a Chinese application. Even though the company structure, there's about two or three steps away from, you know, TikTok is a company in the US, is incorporated in Delaware. It's headquartered in LA and Singapore. Its parent company, TikTok Proprietary Limited, is incorporated in the Cayman Islands. It's headquartered in Shanghai. Its parent company is ByteDance, which, of course, is a Chinese company incorporated in China and is headquartered in Beijing. So there's a stepwise change there. You can follow that sort of that path through. And a lot of companies do this to sort of try and separate out interests. The problem is with this one, it essentially falls under the Chinese very, you know, extremely extraterritorial provisions of the national security laws, which basically says if you're a company, you need to have a Chinese Communist Party element in your company. You need to have a golden share. So Chinese government will take out 1% share, perhaps more, of every company, which gives it the right to access things. And if the Chinese government says so, it will be directed, often without any transparency or knowledge, to turn over data or algorithms or anything else. So those are the central concerns. Should it be banned in Australia? Again, as I said, there are a range of other mitigating issues coming from the point of things such as free speech. You know, again, it's got a large community. Does this matter to a lot of people, etc.? There are also two, frankly, I think banning it doesn't actually address a lot of the underlying core issues around data privacy, Chinese interests, all those other sort of things which are inherent to the digital system in which we now live.
Well, we'll explore some of those things in a bit more detail in a minute. But what would be the ramifications of acting against TikTok in Australia? And of course, we should repeat that the Americans are saying it should be sold and it would only be banned if the Chinese refuse to do that.
Okay, let me address that last part first about being banned. Ideally, in the best of all worlds, it could be sold. They've got 6 months to do that, to find a buyer. The problem is that China has made it clear that it will not sell it, which tells you a lot about the fact that Chinese sees this as a strategic asset. They will argue that under their platforms, you know, being an AI superpower by 2030 and under the national security laws, that this is, you know, very sensitive technology that will be handed over, the AI algorithm. So even if TikTok could find a buyer, it is exceptionally unlikely that the Chinese government would agree to the sale. In terms of a ban, so that leaves us to a ban. In terms of a ban, well, we have to remember that even if the Australian government doesn't do anything, Australia is a technology taker. We can do small things around the edges. We were in the lead on things like Huawei and so on. Again, that was very much a Five Eyes sort of thing as well. But really, we are a taker in this space. In terms of global media footprint, global footprint, I think TikTok has got something like 1.1 billion users or active users. In Australia, TikTok say that they've got, I think it's over 8 million active users on the platform. They estimate about 300,000 people have businesses there. I'm not entirely certain whether that's a TikTok only business or whether it's, people using it, as a range of different platforms. If we banned it, you would expect to see people complaining. And again, for TikTok to say that we don't do political influence. When the ban came up in Congress, TikTok sent out a notification to its users saying, get in contact with your congressman. So essentially exerting some degree of political, if it's a political influence, with the result that there was, a whole bunch of teenagers and 12-year-olds were ringing up their congressman. So there would be some ban there. But if we look at where a ban has already been put in place, and that is India. So in India, 2020, India banned TikTok. What we saw then was that those users migrated. There was a few attempts to build an Indian-only sort of platform, but most of those users migrated back to YouTube, which is still the number one platform for teenagers and early 20s, etc., and onto Instagram. So there is identically a need for this sort of thing. This is where they feel comfort and their home, as it were. They can express themselves and so on. But you see a reinforcement of existing platforms. So that is likely the most likely effect. Politically, it depends on whether the politician thinks it's tenable in a very comparatively tight election.
Now, just in terms of the technology, is it possible technically to actually ban TikTok here? Can you get around a ban is what I'm asking.
Yeah, look, I don't think, again, this is what I mean about us being a technology taker. What it would mean is that, the Apple store, the various stores would say, okay, effectively geolocate, we cannot sell you this in Australia. So from that point of view, it would be a diminishment and probably not an outright ban. Because again, we actually believe in the free internet in this country. And that's part of the issue that we have here, around things like free speech and censorship. So I think you could sort of say we try to ban it. Again, the US, of course, another provision here is that you probably find, in the courts for a while because it would be contested over First Amendment rights. So I don't think, it's one of the strengths of a democratic system, but it's also, in this case, a bit of a weakness as well.
And if TikTok were banned, should other Chinese-owned platforms like WeChat be banned as well?
Yes, and that's where you end up on a bit of a slippery slope. I have more, again, part of the real issues here is the fact that there is intransparency, opaqueness around these apps. We don't actually have much visibility, or the average Australian doesn't, policymaker doesn't. They'll use them for particular purposes. There is no reciprocity. So, we talk about TikTok here. TikTok's not available in China, nor is Facebook, Twitter, or those or Western apps. In China, they have Dayu, and I've probably got the pronunciation wrong. But Dayu was the original, is the company that provided the AI to TikTok. So it's basically, it was came from Dayu developed TikTok. They used the AI engine that they had for previous work for news curation and so on. And they bought Musical.ly, which gave them that video component and put the two together. But these apps aren't available in China. So there's very much a broadcast possibility for the Chinese and Chinese government, but there is no receptor capability on the other side. And that's one of the issues we have. So can we ban things here? It does be a slippery slope. We banned it because we don't like it. Having said that, when we think about old style media, for example, newspapers, radio, there are provisions about ownership that apply. You can't own certain things if you have, a range of provisions around those. So those things may, need to be updated potentially for the 21st century. Rather than being, that applies to these things, this is something new, doesn't apply.
They're sort of qualitatively different provisions, though, of course, aren't they? I mean, they're about making sure you get more voices rather than limiting or stopping a voice.
And this is part of the problem with the technology. It applies too to the Huawei issue as well, in the sense that all these technologies are omni-use. There are fewer, if any, choke points that you can say, okay, if we control this choke point, we will actually be able to exert some degree of control or surety around it. And they have immeasurable uses. And it's going to get worse because, I mean, TikTok is already an amplification platform. It's an opportunity platform. The reason why it's so attractive to Gen Z is it gives them a space that is separate from their parents and other, influenced society. It gives them the opportunity to express themselves. So if you think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Democracies already provide the physiological needs, pretty much, but all the rest is now being provided by these platforms. So part of the question, and it's not going to be just TikTok, it's for a range of other things in our society, how can we actually make sure that those needs are being met through other means? And they're clearly not. I mean, TikTok's being able to do that and then being able to effectively weaponize or amplify using their AI capabilities. That's going to get worse.
Obviously, a lot of people are worried about TikTok because of its addictive effect on young people. But surely the only justification for actually taking action against it would be the spying aspect of it, the access to data, which could be some sort of threat to national security, widely defined. We couldn't possibly justify, could we, acting against it just because we don't like the way it influences young people?
I understand, coming from that world, I fully understand the concerns, and I don't think they are irrelevant nor should be swept aside. They need to be managed carefully. The problem is that we're in a very different world to when some of these provisions or understandings were made. As I said, the technology is omnipresent. The attention spans are shorter. A lot of these things are more transparent. You could actually, as your point about addiction is that you might be able to make some controls over this on the basis of, say, for example, health. My problem is that the twofold. Firstly, I do not like the constant securitization and the creeping national security claim across a whole range of what is people's daily habits and lives. That's just an instinctive reaction of someone living in democracy. The second thing is that anything that, because the world's fast moving, you need to, basically it's going to be a case of you have to run twice as fast to stay in the same spot. You can't go back and just put control and sort of say, we want to go back to sort of something where we felt comfortable in 1990. It's not how it's going to work. I would be much more comforted if I saw an effort to inspire, open, engage around alternative platform development around, I hesitate to use the word education because I don't think our education institutions are necessarily up to the task. particularly if they're directed from Canberra, because, again, there's just not that awareness of how fast the world is moving. But giving people the capability and more agency rather than trying to wrap them more in cotton wool, more of an education program around, you know, what these things are. And we shouldn't underestimate the basic cynicism of a lot of teenagers. That's what often driving them away from traditional things into things like TikTok and, you know, other communities. Certainly when I look at how, you know, a lot of younger people, including my own kids who are, you know, a bit beyond the Zoomer age at the moment, they worked on multiple platforms and they had different identities for that platforms depending on the trends that were there. So I don't think we should overstate its influence, and I don't think we should underestimate the, you know, sort of resilience of a lot of the teenagers and so on in this space.
And you're also saying we shouldn't overstate the security danger that it represents, the power of China.
So I think in that regard, we need to actually take a more holistic view. If we just look at TikTok by itself and solely and say, okay, that's not an issue. If we start saying, and this comes back to what is Chinese intent and how are they using this and what capabilities does the platform give it to use things later? If you looked at Chinese, you know, China 20 years ago, we would be much more comfortable because it was not the place that is now, you know, becoming more and more authoritarian and assertive under Xi Jinping. You know, things like the national security laws are deeply concerning. What the one that's just passed in Hong Kong gives us a sense of what could be exerted extraterritoriality, you know, from an extraterritorial point of view. So I think then there's language about if there's anything to cause dissatisfaction or, you know, that sort of thing, that which is exceptionally broad. And that's being exerted more and more on Chinese communities. So that we also have a, you know, need to protect our own communities, etc. Even though I have doubts and I have concerns, I will admit I'm leaning a bit more on the side of banning or doing something about TikTok. I'm not entirely certain just what, because we are a taker, because you know, our ability to influence these things is comparatively limited. That, as I said, has been contingent and contextualized on the time and space we see ourselves with, and with the drivers, motivations, and behaviors we're seeing of, you know, the key actors in this space.
Is there a fundamental difference, though, when we're talking in the security space between Huawei, which was going to be right at the core of the telecommunications network of the country, as it were, and TikTok, which is obviously separate from that?
Yeah, they are like and unlike. So if I go back to my concerns about, was I talking about earlier about the technology part, about the fact that we're dealing with a general purpose technology. We're dealing with something that's is omni use, used for many different things. The thing about Huawei is a lot of that rests, you know, that ICT AI rests on a body of infrastructure knowledge, and Huawei was deep inside that stack. And as a rule of thumb, the deeper you are on the stack, the more control you can exert on that stack. That wasn't so much of a problem when it was 4G, 5G is a different, you know, kettle of fish because of that increased capability and the fewer choke points that we now have over that technology. So that was Huawei. If I think about TikTok, there is a different stack we should be thinking about. And again, the easiest way to think about that is probably Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And it matters more to a democracy than to an authoritarian regime, because democracies, you know, how people react, how they think, etc., is deep in the democratic stack, if you like. And at the moment, that's what's being targeted. But we have no ability to, you know, to retarget back towards China. And China's been, you know, it's been quite savvy use. They've been using tools against us. They've been using humor against us. They're now using AI. And if I think about, you know, we have no opportunity to do what, you know, Alexei Navalny did, for example, with Putin, where he put out that video showing Putin's extravagant lifestyle, which was extremely popular, because we don't have that way into the Chinese, you know, beyond the firewall. So I think, again, they're both examples of the wickedness of technology in the world, the interconnectedness, the difficulty in finding ready solutions. And I think we will find ourselves just doing patchwork solutions while we try and figure our way through. But there's no global strategic plan that's, you know, or, you know, strategic approach that's going to allow us to resolve these issues.
Australia's taking a different approach to America at the moment on this issue, but Anthony Albanese has said that the government will follow the security advice. So presumably at the moment, the security advice is not to do anything. What do you think the more detailed picture of that advice would be? What would the government be being told at the moment by its national security establishment?
No, that's a good question. I mean, I've got no insight into that at all. If I was to sit there, again, part of the issue here is what we can do. I mean, we could go and, because there were choke points we could apply to critical infrastructure, we could go and ban Huawei. It was a different thing. This is no less important in some respects in terms of democracy as opposed to critical infrastructure. And the government has got fewer levers over that, partly because, you know, once you're in the system, it's harder to control, you know, you're reliant on some of these forums yourself. I think, again, if I go back, though, to a lot of this, you know, there's two parts of the problem. What can we do about the technology? Well, we can probably sort of say things such as you need to base your data on Australians in Australia. That's not the case at the moment. And even we've got instances even where it's being stored, you know, American side, even though it's being stored in non-Chinese, you know, data centers, still being accessed by Chinese employees. So we could do something around the technology. We could ask about the algorithm, but notoriously companies, because it is commercial proprietary information, are very reluctant to reveal what their algorithms and so on are. What we do know is it's been very effective. Then we go back to the political side, which is the China is a governing system. And I go back to the, you know, the what are the drivers? What are the behaviors we're seeing? We know that the values they're espousing are antithetical to our own, particularly around, you know, freedoms, personal agency, that sort of thing. And we can see that in the, you know, the things from what's happening in Hong Kong, as well as own national security laws and just generally broadly Chinese society. We know that they aspire to be a superpower in science, technology and in AI by 2030. And they, you know, they have civilian military fusion, which we don't have here, but you have to regard any sort of technology or commercial proprietary material from China as being, you know, essentially with it also held by the PLA and vice versa. We know that they use these technologies for suppression of dissent and opposition. And you can see that in China itself. You can see that in Hong Kong. Of course, we've had examples where, you know, they've been using it against the Uyghurs through the manipulation of the algorithm or through, you know, excluding TikTok videos and so on that has highlighted their case. We know that they exert that influence across the region as well as in Australia, particularly through tracking opponents of the regime, you know, etc. And of course, there's the nature of the Chinese national security laws. Now, if we're saying how do we, you know, a lot of this pressure can be more subtle than just coming up with the wolf warrior diplomacy or, you know, monstering ships in the, you know, South China Sea, etc. What is potentially of concern is the degree of which there is a willingness within government to accommodate PRC concerns.
So do you think that's what's driven this difference with the American approach, the Australian difference, that we don't want, given our better relationship with China at the moment, to jeopardise that?
I think there's a lot of incentives that, and they're actually fairly low-grade incentives, but incentives being dangled in front of the Australian government saying, look, we can work this through. We can accommodate this. I mean, it's often not as blatant as you do this, we'll do that, et cetera. There's a mutual understanding. So potentially there is. I couldn't, you know, again, I'm not privy to those conversations. But again, you know, given the sort of the reluctance, for example, of the defence minister to raise, the prime minister to raise the use of the incident with the RAN divers in the South China Sea. It's just, we'll just take our time, we'll mention it, etc. So, you know, and that suits China. It said influence comes in many ways. You know, it will be drawn out how many people are dependent on businesses on TikTok, etc. It will be sort of, you know, you've got 8.3 million users here. That's quite a substantial vote. And these are all new voters who are coming in, you know, and voting potentially for the first time, et cetera.
So there are obviously pragmatic political, domestic political concerns here that discourage action by the government. But just finally, do you think if America goes ahead and either forces divestment or bans TikTok, will Australia eventually have to go down that path?
I think it's quite likely. And again, there is issues there around things such as, you know, what does this mean for free speech? What I would like to see much more from the government is a doubling down on things which strengthen our democracy rather than just trying to protect against, you know, those big changes and saying that's enough. And what I mean by that is taking things like data privacy seriously, allowing, you know, again, greater debate and opening up, you know, as many means for free speech. You know, there's a range of things they could be doing that I think are just too hard and again, explaining why this is of concern. You know, it defies me to some extent. So far, we ban it for government, but not really explaining what the concerns are.
A lot of complicated issues there. Leslie Seebeck, thank you so much for sharing your expertise and talking through these very controversial issues with us today. That's all for today's Conversation Politics podcast. Thank you to my producer, Ben Roper. We'll be back with another interview soon, but goodbye for now.
Our theme music is by Lee Rosevere. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.